What is your view of leadership? What makes a leader great and what makes a leader not so great?
Good leadership is really being genuine, really having kind of open door policy, and really getting a sending a vibe of we're all in this together.
Welcome, Third Rock listeners, to the Branding Laboratory. I'm your host, Devo, Chief Experience Officer for the Brand Storyteller and the Fusion Creative Brands. And each week, I have the privilege of speaking with extraordinary leaders and entrepreneurs who are reshaping the way industries work. These conversations go way beyond the surface to explore the core philosophies, the lessons, and the challenges that define the brands that we admire today. And one of the greatest rewards of this podcast is the opportunity to share the insights of some of the brightest minds in business, people who are passionate about pushing boundaries and redefining what's possible. And as I always say, the stories we tell are the brands we build. And this show is a testament to the power of that concept. Let's dive in.
All right, welcome back to the Branding Laboratory, where we dissect the psychology, the process, and the life lessons behind the businesses and the brands that actually resonate. I'm your host, Devo, and this is our 75th episode of this new format. I am the brand storyteller, a strategist, and the guy who asks the questions most other people are afraid to ask. Today, my guest is Reggie Gaither. He is a senior vice president. I knew he was a big deal for Southern First Banking. He has over 20 years in commercial banking. He specializes in credit and business loans and underwriting, and he's right here in Charlotte. And I met Gary at the gym. We work out together. We're one of the early birds on the early crowd. And I don't know if I met you in the gym, Reggie, or in the sauna, one of the two. We have sort of had some really cool, meaningful conversations. We've had potentially some opportunities to collaborate. But you're not just a banker. I think one of the things I really liked about you and why we've connected is because you are a connector. You're a board member for a bunch of different organizations here in Charlotte. But you're all about sort of relationships, from what I can tell. And every conversation I've had with you, you turn clients into friends, and you turn people in the sauna into fellow philosophers. So I do genuinely love your connected capacity and the empathy, and I've had some really cool conversations with you. And so I thought today would be really cool to sort of talk a little bit about leadership and business and brand. And I know you work in the corporate world, which doesn't separate you from my audience. Most of my audience are founders, leaders, ex-corporate refugees, that sort of stuff. So we have a lot of different diversity in the type of people who listen to the show. The centerpiece of the conversation today is really just sort of who you are, Reggie, as a man, as a leader. What do you believe in? How do you show up in the world? How do you lead people in your day-to-day job? I know you're a family man, a father, and a husband. So really the crux and the core of this podcast is just to get to know the leaders in and around the world. And so welcome to the Brand Laboratory. I'm glad you're here, brother.
Bevo, thank you so much. Thank you, first of all, for having me. Second of all, for all those kind words. And I can pick up just from what you've said that you're a very observant man.
I guess that's one way of describing me. I guess different people have different interpretations, but yeah. So anyway, let's just jump straight into it. My first question, I really kind of jump into it for everybody, is if we stripped away your title, we stripped away your bank's name, how would people still know that it's Reggie?
Good question, Devo. For me, I have always been, and I mean from an early age, a relationship guy, which kind of made me great to be for my role in banking. But I've always been a good listener, want to have a wide range of folks in my world, in my network. I meet people from all different backgrounds, and I'm able to find common ground in just about anybody. And so you mentioned being a connector earlier. I am. I connect folks with people that can help. And part of it is I've lived in the city for 41 years now. So that helps. I know a lot of people.
You are a connector, and you're well connected is sort of the word on the street.
I am. And it sounds bragging, but again, it's easier when you've been somewhere for a long time and you've been active and you meet a lot of people.
You know, I used to work in the banking world for many years, actually 15 years. I worked in New York City, I worked in California, and I worked for a Fortune 50 bank. And so I've sort of seen what that culture looks like. And mm-hmm. and banking has its own brand, but you're also a brand as a leader. You're a senior vice president in the company. Has that always been clear to you, or did you have to sort of find a way to find it? Who you are as a brand leader, like how do you mix sort of the culture between Reggie Gaither, and when I, where I'm going with this is in the branding world, I talk a lot about you are the brand, like who, how you show up as an individual. And we just talk real briefly about you being a connector and you're well connected and you build relationships and all those things. And that is part of the Reggie brand, right? Banking has sort of a different view of the world. And I know a lot of people have sort of a perception of that. And I don't know much about your bank and First Southern or Southern First, but how do you sort of separate Reggie as the man and Reggie as the banker, or better yet, how do you keep the two in alignment so that you can still show up with such a successful career?
The good part with me here is it's somewhat intertwined, and bear with me here, because I'm kind of a face guy for the bank. In other words, I'm on the sales side, I'm on the front line. There are a host of customers, clients for this bank that I am their primary contact to the bank. And so what happens there is I'm helping them in business in terms of lending, deposits, treasury management, buying a business, whatever they may need. And then a lot of times I become friendly with them. I become friends. I've had people that I've banked for 15, 20 years, and we still have a strong relationship. So my bank benefits from me being able to build that rapport with folks and them get to trust me and know that I'm fighting on their behalf. And so it kind of, I'm able to be myself at this bank. Now, I will say too, no offense to large banks or regional banks. I work for a community bank, $4.2 billion in assets in 8 markets and only 305 employees. So it becomes a little easier for my worlds to intertwine, if you will.
Was your culture already established at the bank, or have you helped drive sort of what that looks like because of the role you play being customer facing and relationship forward and all those sorts of things? I guess I'm wondering, is chicken or the egg? Was Southern First always sort of in line with that? Or did you, in the 20 years working there and kind of moving up to the ranks of the company, did you help sort of shape that relationship first culture?
Good question. I would say my brand, the way I'm wired, kind of fits in with the core values of Southern First. So yes, I've been in commercial banking for over 20 years, but only my last 2.5 years have been here at Southern First. Interesting enough, the individual I worked for, my manager, I've worked for him at 2 other banks.
Oh, wow.
I enjoyed working for him. When he got this market exec role here at Southern First in Charlotte, when they came to this market 4.5 years ago, he tried to recruit me. I said no the first time. He tried to recruit me a year later. I said no. A third time was the charm. I came and I have not looked back. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so it's a little easier to operate with what we're describing in a smaller world, smaller bank, because I'm able to move the needle.
Right.
Some of my successes at a bank, say like a Wells Fargo or a B of A, it's not going to be noticed. You know, I had, like, prime example, 6 months into this bank, I landed a pretty big deposit relationship. I got a text from my CEO, right? So it's a smaller family, it's a smaller group of people. And so I can have an impact and I can be rewarded for it versus being just one small piece of a large puzzle.
It's so funny. Sorry, I don't mean to laugh at your story, but I was thinking about when I first joined the banking world. I'm going to tell you a funny story. It was an old man's club and I was not used to that. Okay. I'm sort of a rebel. I always have been. I hadn't been in the company. I got transferred from New York City out to San Diego to help a buyout. And in the process of the buyout, my boss brought me with him. And we were these sort of rogue pioneers from New York City and came into this old man's club out in San Diego. And anyway, I had probably been on the job for about 2 weeks, and the bathroom on the floor that I was assigned to was not working. So I just sort of meandered my way up to the executive level and ended up in the bathroom. It was the CEO's bathroom. And bro, no joke, I'm in the bathroom, finished washing my hands. I walk out and he comes walking in and he looked at me like I had just invaded his entire battalion. He was like, what the fuck? Like, and I'm not even gonna be like, anyway.
And you're likely the first person to ever do that to him too.
Yeah. And that story was told many times over, that this young upstart from New York City was in his bathroom and he was like, who is invading? Anyways, sorry, I digress.
Just awesome.
Yeah. So that sort of shapes the trajectory of me in 15 years in the banking world. In terms of you, Reggie, who you were before you got into the bank, I'm always fascinated by people's origin stories. You weren't always in banking, or were you? What were you sort of doing prior to the 20-year history you've had in this profession?
Well, I tell you, I have been in banking or lending services my entire career.
Oh, okay.
I started on the underwriting side, supporting the line or supporting the sales folks for what I do right now. My only stint outside of banking was 5.5 years with Ford Credit or Ford Financial. But I was there, I was underwriting, still again, commercial deals, large companies coming to get large fleets from Ford. So I've always liked that side. But what happened to me is, while at Ford, I just remember kind of thinking, man, is this all it is, sitting at this desk for 8 hours a day, crunching numbers and just moving on? It just didn't feel real rewarding. And there was a position called, what's called a dealer account manager, which is more of a sales guy in that same company. I was up for that. I was pursuing to get that. Then the Great Recession happened,
right?
Ford actually felt it first. When they blew it up, my job was going to move. I decided to go back into banking, but I knew that, hey, I'll go to a bank and work the underwriting side to get in, but I let them know from the gate in my interviewing process that I wanted to be on the sales side. They made that happen within a year or so, and I just haven't looked back. And to me, the change there was, again, like I told you in the beginning, I'm a relationship guy. I love to meet people. I'd love to see, you know, where they come from, how they became who they are. And so then it became a world of, I'm only at the desk, you know, half the day. I'm out and about. I'm meeting with people. I'm figuring out what their needs are, what's going on, and how can I help?
This idea of relationships, I'd like to just take this back to young Reggie. You come from a stable family. Your parents were, you're not any crazy stories around that.
Yeah.
Is this something that was distilled in you as an early child, this relationship capacity? Were you always good at making friends, or was this sort of just like, have you always been this amicable sort of gregarious gentleman? Like who are you at the core? Like where did this idea of relationships and building relationships, more importantly, come from?
I guess it would start with the family. I was born in a two-parent home. Dad and mom, I had a brother who's still close to me. He lives in Huntersville. And then we lived in a pretty good community. And I was active. I played sports. So I led a lot of people that way. Went to church all my life. Had a network through folks that I attended church with. And then, man, sports, neighborhood, church, my parents' network of friends. So there'd be people coming over, you know, to hang out. And of course, I get to know those kids. And so I guess I've always been like a never really shy, right? Always, you know, if you will, talking too much, meeting too many people and figuring out what's going on. And so it just kind of naturally flowed into the role I am now and the person I am. Mm-hmm. So when I say I help people on the banking side, of course, or I'll have a customer, you know, come to ask me about something that's non-banking. If I ask somebody, I'll send them that way. Well, I do the same thing on my personal life. Mm-hmm. So it's nothing I intentionally created. I think it was just a natural progression in my life. Yeah. And it's not on me. I have a lot to give kudos to, like, you know, my parents, people on my network, you know, mentors I've had along the way. So
one thing I noticed about you early on when I first met you is you exude a lot of confidence. And it's interesting to me, and I'm not saying this is the common denominator, but I've interviewed a lot of athletes and had a lot of relationships with athletes, and I myself am one, played college sports as well. And I see there's a common thread in athletes. They are generally more confident. They are generally more relationship-driven. And this is just an anecdotal observation. I don't know if the data supports this or not. Mm-hmm. But I have generally known most of the athletes that I have ever met or engaged with that participated at a relatively high level of sports were not only more confident in themselves, but also very relationship driven. Have you ever thought about the thread, the connection between sports, relationships, self-confidence, how you view the world? Is that something that you've ever sort of just given some thought to?
I agree wholeheartedly. In fact, I know a lot of business owners that, in fact, I'll save the identities, but I have a business owner who told me within the last year, if he has a 4.0 regular student graduate compared to a 3.2 GPA person that played a sport, he leans to the athlete.
Always.
And not because he, you know, sports are the end all be all. It's what it creates, right? You're working in a team environment. You have to work hard. You're used to getting constructive criticism, yeah. Right? I don't know. Yeah, you know, I mean, can those traits be formed other ways? Maybe so, but there's something about, in fact, I've been preaching that to my sons. My oldest is playing on the college level right now, basketball, and my youngest looks like he will be too. And I just love how it's really turned him into a man, and I love the connections he's making with some of the guys he has on the team with him.
Well, my overview of that, and we'll get off to the next point, is that all things being equal, that's not to say that people who have never played sports aren't great leaders, don't have self-confidence.
And I don't mean to say that. Yeah,
yeah, there's a lot of nerdy people out there, and I say that politely because I'm kind of a nerd as well, that have never played sports but are still doing quite successful in life, yada, yada. But I'm simply suggesting that if all things are being equal on the same Richter scale and just sort of like your 3.2, 4.0 GPA comparison you said, if someone had played sports but was also doing well in school and doing all the other things, again, all things being equal, if there's just a different edge about an athlete, in my opinion, and that's really, and we'll just leave it at that. We'll take it to the next question. I'm always fascinated by you're in a position of leadership, and I would imagine that you've always been in some sort of leadership most of your life, given what I've seen and heard and sort of tasted so far of the brand of Reggie. What is your view of leadership? What makes a leader great and what makes a leader not so great?
Good leadership is really being genuine, really having kind of open door policy, and really sending a vibe of we're all in this together. Mm-hmm. You know, I have worked for a lot of different folks, and you can usually tell who's in your corner. I'm currently working for a guy right now where he's transparent, he's honest, he shoots straight, and I just think it makes it easier for me to work for him. The folks that support me, I am open door. Come in. If you're having problems, you have an issue, you want to get through it, you can talk to me. I'm going to listen to you. I'm going to pretend like I'm in your shoes, and we'll try to figure out a way to make things work.
So you're on a stage right now and you're speaking to young leaders, and you're going to distill a central message to them about leadership and what it's done for you and how you lead and whatnot. What does that look like? What does that sound like?
Being completely honest and open about your journey helps. Being fair, listening to all sides. I think a lot of folks get to a position and they act as if they've been the same leader or the same person, the same position for decades, when everyone went through, the bumps in the road to get there. You know, everyone had to learn, right? And so I think being honest and open about that and telling your story, I think helps make you more genuine as a leader and have people have a better chance to follow you and realize you're in their corner.
I always look at leaders, and one of the common threads I see in good leadership is that they realize that it's an iterative and revolving aspects. Like, it's something you always have to sort of be self-aware around. You always have to work on it. You have to continue to grow yourself individually, personally, professionally, emotionally. And that's one of the things that I think some people miss. And I was just having a conversation with somebody yesterday. It just sort of having this conversation, and they were kind of confused on what leadership had to do with branding. And I'm going this sort of like just sort of going out into my trajectory here for a second. For me, branding is literally everything that you represent as an owner, as a CEO, as a senior vice president, as an entrepreneur. Your brand is you. How do you show up in the world? How do you treat people? Are you good at relationships? Are you good at customer service and all these different things? And most importantly, how do you lead? Not just your, and this doesn't just apply if you have a team or not a team. How do you just show up and lead in life in general? And I think most people miss out that leadership and branding and messaging and all those things are interconnected. And I'm just curious, as you've grown in your, I don't know how old you are, but you've been in, I think we're roughly the same age. As you've grown, 51, well done. So as you've grown through your life cycle as a professional and as a man and as a father and as a husband, do you see shifts in your leadership style? And most importantly, were there moments where you sort of were reflective about the shift and had to make an adjustment to become something bigger and better than you already were before that?
Devo, I think I'm forever learning, forever growing, forever adjusting, forever changing the views I may have on things. In talks of the brand, I can't help but get back to being truthful, genuine, and open. So I would say, hey, everybody should come up with their brand, who they are, you know, what they value, their core values. But I would argue another piece of that is, your brand a lot of times is what people say your brand is when you're not in the room.
Perception.
That's right. And what I mean by that is, but you're not going to always know the negative views of you or whatnot. But I think if you're genuine, honest, and do good by folks, that, man, people talk about that, right? Like, I'll never forget, I had a friend who was looking to hire someone, called me about them. I stayed very neutral. I just said, hey, listen, smart person, sharp guy, you know, good mind. We just, for whatever reason, didn't see eye to eye when we worked together. Weeks later, I asked him if he hired her. And he said, I didn't. I said, oh, what happened? He said, Reggie, if he didn't see eye to eye with you, I'd rather not be in our organization. Huge compliment. But it goes back to what I'm describing in that, be honest, be transparent, and take the selfishness out of things.
Does not seeing eye to eye always mean dissonance, however?
I wouldn't say so. Yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, you and I may disagree on a couple of things, but at the end of the day, what's our ultimate objective here? And we may have two ways of getting there. So, and again, I'm not suggesting that this is a good or a bad thing. I'm just wondering, does not seeing eye to eye with somebody always lead to a negative outcome?
No. And I think that's where you go back to being genuine and honest. Mm-hmm. So you and I could be in the same organization working. We're not going to agree with everything, but what I would want from you, Debo, is for you to be honest about your take on it. I give you mine, but you actually hear me out and we discuss, and maybe the real answer is somewhere in the middle.
That's interesting. I actually did an article on LinkedIn on this yesterday, and this sort of idea of actually listening to people and how often we're even in, I catch myself in the middle of a podcast already like trying to move on to my next point instead of listening to what you're saying and having some sort of an understanding and an assessment of that. We're always like thinking about the next thing that we want to say to people, right? Like
everyone
does it. And it's really important to sort of step back and be self-aware around that, because there's a lot of times when we're just thinking about our next point, we're not listening to for the middle ground. We're like, we're doing ourselves a disservice, because you might actually have a really good point, and even though I'm like completely focused that I'm right, I actually could be wrong and you might have a better way of doing it. So anyway, interesting point.
I think the person you're talking to can pick up on that.
Oh, totally. Totally. Right. You can see it. If you're a self-aware and sort of like a good observer of things, you can literally see people who are sort of like getting ready to like just chomping at the bit to say the next question.
As soon as they finish talking, I've got the point that I want to put in.
I was on a podcast on Friday, I guess, of last week. And that, just again, the host was literally didn't even acknowledge anything that I would say in the conversation. And it was just straight into the next question. And I was like, bro, we should probably, you're not going to take some time to unpack that. That was some deep philosophical meandering I just took, bro. Come on, man. Let's pull it back for a minute. Anyway, I digress. You know, one of the things that is really big to me, and you said it earlier, you said trust and truthful. Trust is a currency, right? And you have to earn that, right? And it sounds like, from what I can tell, in again, watching you at the nonprofit and how people sort of circulate to you and that sort of stuff, you've earned people's trust, right? And in banking, trust is literally currency, like no pun intended. How have you, and I probably know your answer, but how do you build and maintain trust, both internally, with clients, with family, with friends, with your wife, with your sons? Like, what does that look like for you? How does one earn and build trust with the ecosystem of themselves?
I'll start on the banking side of things. So I am constantly looking at deals for potential customers or deals for existing customers. Well, I say no a whole lot more than I say yes. Okay. So there are bankers in the market that on a no, they may not even call back to give that no. Or if they call to give it, it's a no and they're trying to get off the phone as fast as possible. They're trying to be done and trying to move on to the next deal. What I've made a practice of doing for many, many years now is taking the time to explain to the prospect or my customer why it's a no. Hey, here's what we're seeing. Here's what that makes sense for us. And then I like to give advice to say, hey, here's some things you can do over the next 6 months, 18 months to make this different and make this more of a bankable deal. And then I'll also refer them to people outside of my bank that I've built relationships with that may be to help. And what I have found, you know, selfishly, I do this maybe a little bit, is that those folks tend to come back to me later when they have another need because I put the time forth.
I'm really big on rubrics and giving people takeaways and things that they can actively inject into their life right then and there. So I love that piece. And it's kind of funny, you know, a lot of times we run up against these buffers, if you will, or these obstacles in our life. And I think a lot of times people just sort of look at it and in some cases people will just sort of like stop, whether it's out of fear, whether it's out of lack of knowledge, whether it's lack of skill. I don't know what it is, but I really sort of feel like whatever buffers you bump up against, it's an opportunity for you to learn something in order to expand in some way, shape, or form, right? I personally do not believe in the no solution scenario. I just don't believe in it. And I may be wrong, and it's gotten me into some trouble, but nonetheless, I sort of believe that every obstacle has a solution. And I'm just curious, when you as a man, as a leader, as a banker, when you're coming up and you just said some of that, you know, what are some things we can do to fix it? If you had to distill down your life into a few cliches or a few metaphors, how do you view obstacles? How do you view lessons? How do you view things that are sort of bumping up against your inability to move past?
Well, you know, some obstacles are more, you know, more or bigger than others, right?
Yeah.
Some are more impactful. Some stress you out more and get you down. But if you think about it, whatever the obstacle, if you reflect on it, you did some learning, you did some growing, hopefully, right? You figured it out. You know, earlier you asked about banking, even the personal life, just any other. Well, I consider myself a pretty smart guy. In the home, my wife jokes sometime that, you know, I think I know everything, right? I was probably more that way 15, 20 years ago. And lately, every now and then I'll say, you know what, babe, you were right. I was wrong. And she's like, look at you. That wasn't hard, was it? So I say that, I joke. It's just that, man, life is tough. And if you think about it, you're going to get through things. You're going to figure it out. Are you going with the best solution? Maybe, maybe not. But if you run into a similar obstacle later, you can take some of that, take what you've gone through, right? Learn, grow, and do better the next time. Mm-hmm. None of us are ever going to be perfect.
Yeah. The more experienced and the older I get, the more I realize the less I actually know about how the world operates and all the different things. And no matter how much knowledge I've acquired and how many books I read and how much experiences I've had, every time I uncover something else, it's like, holy shit, I had no idea. So
I argue, if you're always trying to learn, if you're reading a lot, if you're meeting people and you're actually listening to people, the more you learn, the more you realize how big this world is.
Many of my listeners they run small businesses. They're entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, small business owners. What do you think is one corporate discipline that they could steal from you that would instantly level up how they run their small business?
Man, really control the balance sheet and really be an ultra planner, forecaster looking ahead. Cash truly is still king. Depending on the type of business, you need to be good at managing your accounts payable, your accounts receivable, you know, getting your receivables in fast enough and then negotiating and make your payables run long enough goes a long way. I would say, depending on the size of organization, I think training on all levels is so important.
Yeah.
I'm a banker. I lend money. But I think it's got to make sense, right? I'm somewhat wired to be, you know, debt averse kind of guy. Like any borrowing you do, it needs to be to help the business grow, right? So I think people need to think long and hard about expansion, right? You don't want to, like, put it this way. I have talked, probably at least 10 churches into either not doing a project or making it much less of a project. Because a lot of time our church leaders have this philosophy that says, hey, we build it, they'll come. Well, not necessarily.
Not anymore.
Right? So, planning. I don't think you can ever think too much in your business. And I got this advice from me in my business, and I think it could pot everybody. I think it's important to take, whether it's a half day or a full day, to just get away and truly just give a whole lot of thought to what you're doing.
Totally.
I think we can get caught up in our day to day, right? And before you know it, the day's over, right? And you're just going task to task, trying to figure things out. But I think every now and then you got to step back and say, okay, where am I? Where would I like to be? How can I make that happen? And yeah, write it out, whatever you get. I'm a big journal guy. I don't think I've told you that yet, Devo.
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's been cool. I've been doing it for, oh boy, maybe 25 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a good way to put thought to paper and kind of think through things. And I'll tell you another interesting thing about it. I can go back and read something that I wrote, say, 6 or 7 years ago, and I'll find myself thinking, who is this guy? And it's because we're always changing. Our views are always changing. We're learning more. We're experiencing more. So I say take it up, man. You can do one a week.
Oh, yeah. I journal every morning. I've been doing it for years. I can't speak highly enough for it. In fact, if you look at my over my right shoulder in here, I've probably got 40 different journals that I've recycled through over the last few years. Something that's really interesting to me, this sort of rest and reflection space. If I may, I just want to drop a shameless plug. I actually launched a new product. We have our first event coming out in January. It's called the Untamed Reset. And what it is, it's a wholly curated 3-day men's retreat, journaling, exercising, out in nature. We're going to be out in Sedona in January. And it's specifically designed for small groups of men, people who are ready to sort of, or maybe need to unplug and get away from the performance and just sort of have some time of reflection. They're going to be led. I'll be, of course, your facilitator for it, but we'll have expert coaches, gurus, whomever it is, a guide that we're going to literally be living in nature for 3 days. And at nighttime, we're going to be eating and drinking and just having sort of male camaraderie. During the day, we'll be hiking something or we'll be going out in the middle of the desert and just sort of having like this commune with nature and then commune with our peers later on at night. And one of the reasons I started this is because I noticed in my meanderings and my travelings and all my relationship building that men lack this sort of vehicle to sort of connect not only with nature, but to detach, get away from their families. And that's not a bad thing, but just have a reset and be around male energy to sort of have that camaraderie. And so I'd love to get some more information in your hands about that.
But you posted on that. How many people are you thinking?
No more than 6.
Okay.
Yeah, I want to keep it small. Ideally, it's the 3 to 5 range for me, just where we can have a group of men. Again, the first one is in Sedona. Everything will be taken care of for. It's fully boutique. So I have a travel agent. Once you pay your deposit, she will curate everything for you, your flights, your all of your travel. Everything is bespoke. You just show up, man, and we'll head out into the desert, and we'll spend 3 days out in the desert just communing with man and nature. So highly recommend what you just said. Garrett, go ahead.
It's so important.
Oh, man, totally. And it's not something I ever actually understood, to be honest with you, is I've always applied to the sort of work hard and drive at it. Just keep going. And I never really understood because, you know, I have been blessed with a lot of talents and a lot of different skills and assets. And I just always thought, you know, rest and relaxation was for the wuss. But it's not, man. You need to, like, take time to step away, reset your mind, and just spend time doing nothing for a minute. Your brain needs it. So,
well, two parts of that too, Devo. It's the stepping away, of course, and it's having people that you can talk to and be open with and bounce stuff off each other. Yes. A lot of people go through life and they don't really have that.
Yeah, man. And that's why I started this. I started a fire circle at my house a few months ago. And I invited you to one of them. We haven't done it in a few months, but there was the last group. We had 6 or 7 men out here, sipping some nice whiskey, sitting around the fire, just having like good, deep, meaningful conversations.
Try me again, Deba.
Yeah, man. It's been really cool just to kind of have that's just be in that spirit of things. So that's why I launched this new concept. And again, anyway, I'm getting away from topic. Last question. Is there anything that you, when you look back at sort of the trajectory of your life, was there one pivotal moment where you had to sort of unlearn what you had been doing, what you had been taught, your context, your delivery, to sort of shift into a different level of Reggie?
I don't know if this will fully apply, but I would say in my younger life, prior to marriage, prior to kids, I was a day-to-day kind of just whatever. Living check to check, even though I shouldn't have been, and just kind of just taking life as I did. Got married, and that got a little more, intentional, if you will, just about my direction and where I want to be. And when I had my first son, I think that was like a huge pivot for me. Like, you know, here's this young baby who's relying on me. And I became more of a person that, planning, forecasting, thinking about where I am, and just being more intentional about my decisions in life in terms of how I spend my money and how I spend my time.
I noticed that shift literally the day my child was born, my first child. And I'm not saying that it was a transformational thing. I just noticed that the way I viewed the world literally changed 24 hours later after my baby was born. And I can't really explain it.
I felt the same.
Yeah, something primordial almost.
And it's amazing. Like my oldest, you know, turned 20 a month ago, and I can still clearly remember being in the hospital. I cannot believe 20 years has gone by. Yeah. Life is crazy.
Reggie, man, I really appreciate it. That's it for today's session of the brand.
No, thank you. Thank you for the invite. As I told you, it's my first time being on a podcast. But like you described, it's a conversation.
Yeah, man. I appreciate you showing up. There was a lot of wisdom that you dropped and a lot of insights. And just thank you for your raw, brutal honesty and for being Reggie.
Thank you, Debo. I really appreciate that.
Well, that's it for today's session at the Branding Laboratory. Thank you, Reggie. That was a really cool show. I appreciate you showing up and sharing your history and your story and your principles and your values and some hard-earned wisdom along the way. If you got something valuable from this episode, and I'm sure you did, first of all, thank you to Reggie, not me. Share it with your friend who's building something of their own. If you want to keep experimenting with your brand, hey, join me for more conversations like this by subscribing on your favorite podcast platform or heading over to our website, thebrandstoryteller.com, and there you can find every episode and all the upcoming guests that we have. Until next time, man, keep testing, keep refining, keep building a brand that actually feels just like you. I'm Devo. I'll see you soon. Thanks for tuning in to the Branding Laboratory. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe and leave a review. Connect with us on social media for more branding tips and insights. And remember, your story matters. Until next time, keep building and sharing your unique brand story. I'll see you soon. Thanks for tuning in to the Branding Laboratory. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe and leave a review. Connect with us on social media for more branding tips and insights. And remember, your story matters. Until next time, keep building and sharing your unique brand story. I'll see you soon.